Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live today from McCormick Place. It is the Chicago Auto Show, so come by and say hello as you are on your way in or out. We are perfectly accessible to you. Mike Florio can be found on Twitter at Pro Football Talk, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Well, Mike, I have to ask you, I woke up today to a flurry of tweets about Joe Burrow and about his future. What truth is there, if any, to these rumblings that he's starting to send messages that he may not want to be a Bengal?
Well, you know, there's plenty of breadcrumbs there that have begun to pile up. It started Super Bowl week when Carson Palmer came out and said that he believes, based on his time with the Bengals, and he was a number one overall pick of the franchise, he was there through the 2010 season. He ultimately quit on the Bengals. He didn't retire, although he called it retirement. He unretired quickly when the Raiders gave the Bengals what they wanted in trade for him after Jason Campbell broke a collarbone during the 2011 season. But Palmer said they're not trying to win a Super Bowl. And I thought it was funny because then the sequence went from Carson Palmer saying the Bengals aren't trying to win a Super Bowl to Jordan Palmer being unveiled as one of the members of Team Burrow to get him ready for the draft. And Jordan, of course, is Carson's younger brother. And then Burrow, who had previously said, I'm happy to play for anyone who's willing to pay me, went on Dan Patrick's show during Super Bowl week and said, I want to play for a team that's committed to winning a Super Bowl. It didn't take a whole lot of brain power, which qualifies me for the assignment, to connect those dots and come to the conclusion that Joe Burrow may be hoping that the Bengals don't take him, or that the Bengals trade the pick to someone like the Dolphins. And I can tell you, and I typically avoid the pre-draft smokescreen BS, I can tell you Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, wants Joe Burrow, and there are probably other owners that want Joe Burrow. So it's a delicate dance for Burrow. He can't come out and say, don't draft me, but he can kind of get the message out there, subtly or otherwise, that he'd rather the Bengals not take him. Because the problem is, if they take him anyway, what's he going to do? Sit out a whole year and re-enter the draft? Hell no. He'd be turning down $36 million fully guaranteed over 4 years. But he can hope that the Bengals don't do it. And I think that's where he is right now. He's not going to say no to the Bengals, but I think he hopes the Bengals don't take him.
Yeah, at some point, hoping can become a little bit more actionable if you sort of look at the John Elway model, you know, what that the Manning family was talking about at this time, the way they do it. So I guess the public relations starts to kind of matter here.
Well, yeah, I think that is part of it. And we've only seen this happen twice before where a guy makes a power play. It was Eli Manning in 2004, and he had the cover that came from having Archie Manning be the one who came out and said it, even though Eli was the one who didn't want to go to the Chargers. And one of the reasons he didn't want to go to the Chargers, he visited them and he got the sense that the front office and the coaching staff weren't on the same page as to whether or not they wanted him. He didn't want to be in the middle of that. And that was at a time when A.J. Smith and Marty Schottenheimer were at each other's throats all the time, disagreeing on who the players should be, who they should draft, what they should do. So I think Eli's instincts were accurate. Before that, it was John Elway in 1983. It doesn't happen very often, and I'm all for it. I'm all for a guy making a power play. But the thing is, when you make a power play with a rational team, they're going to do something to avoid wasting a pick. Mike Brown may be perfectly content to say to Joe Burrow, sorry, you're the pick, and if you don't want to play, don't play. And if you want to re-enter the draft, re-enter the draft. Maybe I'll draft you again next year. I mean, here's the thing. If they don't draft Joe Burrow, or if they draft Joe Burrow and he doesn't show up, they save $36 million, right? They never have to pay that money to anybody. So, I don't know that that's something Mike Brown would like to do, but that's a little consolation prize for a guy that's very concerned about his team's profitability. I just think you have to be careful with Brown, because I think he would cut off his nose despite his face. And I think that's why Burrow is maybe treading a little bit lightly here.
Mike, saw this morning that Myles Garrett is being reinstated by the NFL. I thought that suspension would go into next season, if we're being honest. How much of it has to do with the concession that he made, with the apology that he made, and how much has to do with the fact that he hit Mason Rudolph and not somebody else?
Well, no, I think that from the get-go, the plan was have him out for the rest of the season, but make sure that his return is not automatic. The NFL needs to have a file at 345 Park Avenue that it can point to if Myles Garrett ever hits anyone else in the head again with his own helmet, or does something else beyond the boundaries of football that results in a serious injury to a player. They were lucky that Mason Rudolph wasn't seriously injured or worse. He got hit over the head with a windmill of his own helmet, and he didn't even flinch. I mean, it's amazing. You want to talk about toughness? I was shocked. I mean, anybody else would have crumpled in a heap. That helmet weighs 8 pounds. So the NFL, and this is a legal strategy here, you need to be able to say, if Myles Garrett ever does this again, we dotted every T, we crossed every I, we did our due diligence, we were confident that what happened between Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph was a one-time thing, and that's that. And if you just automatically let him back in, you run the risk that if he does it again, that someone would sue you, saying you didn't take reasonable steps to protect me from a guy that you know has a propensity to blow a gasket under pressure. So I think that's what they did when they had their meeting. And my guess is they've had him go to counseling, and they've got this, you know, anywhere from a half inch to one full inch of paperwork that they can rely on if it ever happens again. That's why they did what they did. That's why I thought it was foolish for Myles Garrett to appeal the initial suspension on the basis that it must be a definite number of games, not indefinite, because if the NFL had lost that point, they could have turned around and said, fine, you don't like 6 games, plus, you know, who knows what in 2020? Let's just go ahead and give him a full season. And I think he should be happy in hindsight it didn't play out that way.
1 week of the XFL is a small sample size, to be sure, but it looked like pro football, and people watched it, and people bet on it, and I'm wondering if this is a sustainable momentum for what looks like a much more palatable iteration of this league.
Yeah, I the curiosity took over for a lot of people. 3.3 million watched it on ABC on Saturday, another 2.5 million on ESPN on Sunday. I haven't seen the Fox numbers yet, but look, there's enough there for a slow February weekend. Here's the problem. When All-Star Weekend comes for the NBA in Chicago this weekend, when March Madness begins, before that, the conference championships, when NFL free agency ramps up. I remember last year I was paying attention to the AAF until the weekend that NFL free agency was almost upon us. I forgot about the AAF. Can it stand out when the calendar begins to load up with other stuff? That's why I think they should start this league during the NFL's regular season. Play the games on Tuesday and Wednesday night until the season ends, and then take advantage of these 3 or 4 weeks before March Madness, where you can have your final regular season games, your playoffs, and you get maximum attention that way. I just think it's going to be hard for them to hold this. I love the kickoff. I love the configuration. It's safer, and it reminds me of electric football. I think I like it more because it's safer, but it does remind me of electric football to see 20 guys standing still while the ball's in the air and you're waiting for the returner to catch it. But, you know, you don't have the high-speed collisions because they're only 5 feet apart. So there's some aspects of the XFL that I like. But without star players, guys, that's what I keep coming back to. What is going to make me cause it to be appointment viewing unless and until they have Johnny Manziel, Colin Kaepernick, Trevor Lawrence? If I'm Trevor Lawrence and they offer me $10 million a year for the next 2 seasons, and then I enter the draft, the earliest I can enter the draft anyway, I do it in a heartbeat. And I think it would be $20 million over 2 years well spent by the XFL to attract a guy like Trevor Lawrence. That's the way to make this thing resonate.
What happens with Philip Rivers now that he and the Chargers are no longer a pair?
He says he's going to play up to 2 more years. And I'm having a hard time finding a team that is going to hand him the keys and the contract that will send the message to everyone, we've handed him the keys, right? $25 to $30 million on a one-year deal or maybe a two-year deal that averages $25 to $30 million. Who's going to do that after what we saw from Philip Rivers last year? He had 2 primetime games back-to-back with a total of 7 interceptions. I don't know that he's the guy. Who's going to make him the guy? And it could be that the best move for him is to wait and see how these dominoes fall elsewhere. Because, you know, we think there's going to be a game of quarterback musical chairs where when the music stops, there's going to be more quarterbacks than teams. I think there's a chance when the music stops, there's going to be more teams than quarterbacks. And you may have somebody who says, holy crap, we didn't draft somebody, we didn't sign somebody, we didn't trade somebody, we're stuck with this backup caliber guy that we don't really like. Let's go get Philip Rivers. So it's going to be a tough play for him. And like, hey, if the Panthers trade Cam Newton, Carolina makes sense. If the Titans don't keep Ryan Tannehill, Tennessee makes sense. Maybe he makes sense as an upgrade over Derek Carr for the Raiders. Maybe New England, when the music stops, has no one other than Jared Stidham. But I think there's a lot of ifs here. This isn't like Brett Favre in 2009, where the Vikings fell all over themselves to get him, or Peyton Manning in 2012, or even Alex Smith 2 years ago, when Washington was happy to trade for him. This is a guy that I think teams are going to look at and say, let's see what other options we have before making him the starter.
Mike, the Bears were not in your list of teams. Reason for that? Just kind of a feeling?
Well, here's the thing. You got to get Philip Rivers, you got to pay him $25 to $30 million. You got to send a message with the contract that you're the guy. If it's going to be a Ryan Tannehill type of a situation where you sign him to be the backup with kind of an understanding that maybe you'll supplant the starter, I just don't know that Rivers wants that. I think Rivers believes he's good enough to be the guy. And think about this. How many true franchise quarterbacks have we ever seen happily accept a backup job, right? Now, for guys that haven't made $200 million over the course of their careers, okay, you give me $5, $7 million to be the clipboard holder and help develop a young guy, fine. What else am I going to do? Who else is going to pay me that kind of money? But when you're making that much money on the interest, on the money you already have in the bank, it's a hell of a lot easier to say, no, I'm either your starter or I'm not playing. And, you know, could you see Peyton Manning ever doing something like that? Tom Brady ever being a backup just to keep cashing checks? That's where I think Philip Rivers lands, in that category of guy who isn't going to accept a backup job. You either need to make him the starter or he's just going to sit and wait.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that list would look like of starters who reach a certain threshold of success only to then be pleased to be a backup. Chris Chandler did it with the Bears after he had reached the Super Bowl with the Falcons. And I remember the day that Chandler had to come into a game against the Miami Dolphins and clearly didn't want to be there and didn't want to be in the game. And it was obvious for all that we were watching. And going back even further than that, Steve DeBerg, after he was able to accrue some pretty impressive career counting stats, hung on late with the Falcons as a backup. But maybe Testaverde would be on that.
Let me give you a guy. I got a perfect one for you. Randall Cunningham. Cashed checks as long as he could as a backup, right? He was as good as any quarterback in the NFL in 1998, and he had those years before that with the Eagles. But when it was time for him to be clipboard guy, he was happy to be clipboard guy because he was making $4 or $5 million a year. And where else are you going to make that kind of money? So if you don't have so much banked that you can scoff at that kind of a payday, then you keep making that kind of money if you can do it.
So former Bears defensive coordinator Mel Tucker appears to be in agreement with Michigan State University. They doubled back to him with another bag of cash after he initially said no. And with the opening now at Colorado, it would be easy to connect those dots to Eric Bieniemy from Andy Reid's staff in Kansas City. And in a just world, Eric Bieniemy would already have gotten his shot at a head coaching job in the NFL. I would suspect that he still has to think that next year is the year for him and wouldn't probably grab this college coaching job. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and even if next year is the year to get an offer from an NFL team, I'm going to be very, very picky if I'm Eric Bieniemy. I ain't leaving Patrick Mahomes. I can end up with a fistful of rings, and then Andy Reid retires, and I become Patrick Mahomes' head coach. And I start racking up Super Bowl win after Super Bowl win after Super Bowl win. I am not leaving the hip of Patrick Mahomes as long as I can delay it. Now, there may be a point where you're talking about life-changing money between being an offensive coordinator and being a head coach, and it may take a lot to say no to that. But why do I want a four-year contract at $7 million a year with no guarantee that I'm going to be allowed to coach more than half of the games because the team is bad, the quarterback is bad, there's no plan for who the quarterback's going to be? You've got it pretty good with Patrick Mahomes. And if I'm Eric Bieniemy, I'm very tempted to stay in Kansas City, hope they compensate me accordingly, and ultimately become Andy Reid's successor. You know, we've talked about Bill Belichick's successor for a long time. I don't know how long Andy Reid's going to do this, but at some point, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, I want to have that heart-to-heart with Andy. Hey, what are you thinking about here? Just so I can make my decisions. Because if he's only looking at five more years, I may hang around Kansas City and try to position myself to be the next head coach of the Chiefs.
Mike Florio, thank you.
See you guys. Have a good one.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.